some detail in Corinthians chapter 13. And it's a wonderful chapter. I can remember when I was in school, in high school, I walked to school every day, and there was an area where the grass on the terrace had grown up and the sod was higher than the sidewalk. And that was always full of water when it was raining. So you had a huge puddle there. And so when you tried to get up on the grass and walk around, of course, the grass was muddy there. And as I was trying to carefully navigate this one day, one morning walking to school without getting my shoes too muddy, there, as I was picking my steps, in front of my shoe was a $20 bill, which I reached down, put in my pocket, and walked on to school with a lighter tread. And this chapter 13, in the midst of Corinthians, where he's telling them, now you got to fix this, and you got to fix this, and you're going wrong over here, and I can't praise you about this. This is like that $20 bill I found in the midst of the mud. Because it's a wonderful, wonderful chapter. And we're going to look at verses 6 and 7 this morning. I'm going to read them in your hearing. In fact, I'm going to back up to verse 4 and reiterate. Love is patient. Love is kind. And is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant. Does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own. Is not provoked. Does not take into account a wrong suffered. Does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things. Believes all things. Hopes all things. Endures all things. Now, this chapter essentially tells us what the church should look like and what the individual Christian should look like. So we are finding the definition in here of what love is and what it's not. And, of course, as I've said before, the Greek term is not really well defined by our word love, because our culture has different pictures and connotations of the word love. But if you look here, you can see what it means. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. We're going to look at each one of those phrases in turn. It does not rejoice in unrighteousness. I almost don't know where to start on that subject, because as you look out in popular culture, there's a tremendous amount of rejoicing in unrighteousness. And so you see some kind of act celebrated, and at the risk of dabbling my toe into politics, on the left, I saw people rejoicing in looting and riots this past year on the one side. And then we had an incident at the Capitol, and we had people on the other side of the political spectrum rejoicing over that. And essentially, in both cases, they're rejoicing over unrighteousness. So the love that's depicted here is not universal love. It's not ubiquitous love. Okay? And I've seen people advocate on Facebook and other places universal love. And to them, the meaning of that was all people should be loved along with whatever they did, along with whatever their lifestyle was. Now, Jesus showed love for all people, even the throwaways, even the people the scribes and Pharisees wouldn't even talk to or go near. He showed love to them. But he also rebuked sin wherever he saw it, from the top to the bottom. So he might tell someone, go and sin no more. Or he might say to the scribes, you make long prayers for a pretense while you devour widows' houses. You will receive the greater condemnation. You're going to be punished in the end. So we hear that all lifestyles should be affirmed and celebrated as good in their own way. And some churches are going down that road. But it doesn't comport with, does not rejoice in unrighteousness. And what I mean by this is the love that Paul is describing here, the Christian love he's pointing out and promoting to the Corinthian church, does not rejoice in unrighteousness. What did he tell the Corinthians early in the letter? He said, you have a person in your church living in notorious sin, and guess what? You haven't mourned. You have not been saddened by this mar on your testimony. And you've got to get going and get this straightened out. I don't have to be there. I already know what's going on. So Christian love cannot rejoice in unrighteousness. The proper position for the Christian, the proper response with unrighteousness, whether it be in the church, whether it be in the family, whether it be in society at whole, is to mourn. We're unhappy. We're disappointed. We regret that there is sin out there. And so we're not going to lie to people and call evil good and good evil. It's scarcely love to encourage people to continue a life of sin. It's not even honest. And so that's what Paul said to the church. You've become arrogant. You haven't mourned. You think you're so far advanced spiritually that you can just overlook things. He said, no. No. Now, our culture does celebrate unrighteousness in many ways. Books, television, magazines, movies all often depict some sinful lifestyles, and they glorify them. I don't have to say anything about some of the celebrities or the people from Hollywood that are glorified in popular culture, because whatever sin or evil they do is limited only by their capacity and imagination. If they could think of more things to do, they would. And there's been many arguments over the years concerning what Christians could do or what they should refrain from doing. I'm not going to replow that ground. It's been plowed many times. But I want to point out that any activity that consists of rejoicing in unrighteousness is not a good activity for the Christian. and there are many such. It's better avoided. I want to say a few words here on the subject of gossip. And you might think gossip is kind of a strange thing to bring into Corinthians 13. But gossip at its root, if we dig it up and get right down to the basics, is rejoicing in unrighteousness. That's what it is. Now, it's often considered to be very wrong if it's not true. And gossip often is not true. Okay? And now you get into things like lying or false witness. And so it's considered bad to pass half-true information along or false information, half-truths, outright lies, because as they're passed from person to person, the story grows on its own and assumes a life of its own, more or less. And it gets further and further from the truth as it grows. And so the people passing it along are engaged in false witness, generally harming the reputation of someone in the process. But that's one aspect of gossip. And it's often the case, but gossip can be true. The facts can be established. Did you hear what so-and-so did? Did you hear about so-and-so's daughter or so-and-so's son? True gossip generally involves some fact, but it's an unpleasant fact about somebody that we know or we know of. Now, the information might well be limited to kind of a small circle of people, and it's part of the human condition that if we know something that somebody else does not know, it makes us feel important to tell. And then the person, oh, I never would have thought that. And all of a sudden, the speaker is the center of attention. And we like that. Now, it's not bearing false witness if what you say is true, but it can be damaging to the people you're talking about. And a person learning this information can pass it on to others. And they don't necessarily stop to think that what they're doing is rejoicing in unrighteousness. But they are. And they're also encouraging others to rejoice with them. Gossip can be done in the church or over the phone, can be done in casual conversation. I know of a case where gossip was rampant in a prayer meeting. Go figure. An individual, by their prayers, would convey something they knew about others in the group as they were taking prayer requests or praying. Think about that. Think about it. Think of using prayer to convey gossip and in the process rejoice in unrighteousness. I remember a case very well of a fairly prominent member of the church whose daughter became pregnant out of wedlock. And it was a very humiliating experience for them. And Nancy and I talked about it and we decided to go visit them, and she shopped and purchased a very nice baby gift, and we went over and talked with the parents and tried to comfort them as best we can. We left the gift. I said, it doesn't matter the circumstances of the birth, the baby still needs clothes to wear. And years later, the mother of that girl told me that we were the only ones that came and visited them during that time. Now, sometimes when things like this happen, and there is a problem, and there certainly was, what people need is some comfort. They need some application of Corinthians 13 love. Because we saw before that love is kind. Rejoices with the truth. So if we don't rejoice in unrighteousness, we rejoice with the truth. That fits in with the issue of universal love that I mentioned before, because the truth which we have from God and we have through His Word causes us to rejoice. That truth has nothing to do with false doctrine, has nothing to do with false teaching, because God is truth. Jesus said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. And it has nothing to do with sinful lifestyles. And we can love the people without affirmation of a sinful lifestyle. Because when you speak, when I speak from the pulpit, we don't speak to find people where they are and put them deep in sleep. Okay. Although if someone nods off, I won't get after you. We do it to wake them up and explain to them the truth. Now, we don't condemn people. We don't shun people because of unrighteous lives. If someone is living a sinful lifestyle, the church is what they need. My dad grew angry with self-righteous attitude one time in the church. He suggested they put clubs along the pews so that they could club the sinners and keep them out and keep the place pure. I wish you could have known the man. He had a very unique way of speaking. We need to recognize that God, through Christ, can deal with unrighteous lives. We can't. We got all we can do to deal with our own lives. There's a lifetime worth of work just working on yourself. And while you do that, it's very likely you won't have leftover energy to work on someone else. But the Word can do it, because faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. And so we can deal with people that have considerable amount of sin in their lives. But if we rejoice with the truth, we're going to point people toward the truth. We put their feet on the narrow way. And so, while we don't rejoice in unrighteousness, neither do we need to focus on sins of people we're working with. If somebody asks me, is this wrong? I'll tell them the truth. Quite often the answer is yes. But typically, if the person asks, they already know. They're kind of searching for you to say, oh, no, that's fine. Put me back to sleep and let me live as I am. But if we rejoice concerning the truth, that's where we're pointing them. That's where we're leading them. They don't need us to affirm their lifestyle. They don't need us to condemn their lifestyle. They need us to point them to Christ. Because that's where the real change comes. If we think we can do it on our own, if we think we can do it, we're bound to fail. Bears all things. Now, the word bear here, and I'm indebted to my commentaries for analysis on the Greek, means to cover, support, or protect. And so we might need to cover, support, or protect our fellow believers in many ways. As they struggle, we need to help them. Now, in houses, we have what's called bearing walls. They're important. And they're necessary because the house is designed in such a way that the live load and the dead load flows to the bearing walls, to the foundation, and thus to the ground. They support the structure. They support the roof. So if you tear out a bearing wall, as I have seen done, bad things will happen. The structure will be in danger of actually falling down. And so in the church, there's a need to support each other. Each and every one of us can be a bearing wall in our own particular way. Okay, so somebody might come up here and do special music, and that might be a great blessing to someone sitting out in the congregation. Somebody can pray. Somebody can teach Sunday school. Somebody can go take a meal to an individual in need. And so all of these things are what? Bearing things. We also need to protect one another from harm when we can. Outside the church walls, it's a dog-eat-dog world. Okay. National politics are ugly. Corporate politics, which I've seen, is even worse. And so, outside the church walls, rather than looking to help somebody, the people all often look for a way to take advantage. Oh, how can I help myself due to this issue over here? Poor Billy is sick. Maybe I can take some of his functions, take his job. Maybe by the time he comes back, there'll be no job. So, like the house with bearing walls, if bearing in the church is compromised, then I tell you the structure can come down. And people have great expectations of a church. And sometimes somebody needs help. They don't ask for help. They don't get help. And they feel hurt by it. But sometimes it was not selfishness or meanness. Sometimes it was straight ignorance. So, along with bearing all things, sometimes Christians also need to disclose some things. I'm really short of money this month. I don't know if I can pay my rent. Well, I'll tell you something. If the church knows, the church will help you bear up under that burden. Believes all things. Love gives the benefit of the doubt. This is particularly true in the church. Try to look for a favorable possibility. Don't be like the scribes and Pharisees that enjoy judging and looking down their nose at other people. Now, believe it or not, this phrase can work in the world outside the walls of the church. Never think that a faith-based worldview is unworkable. I was in the business world for many years. When an employee came into my office with a story of some kind, I used to tell them this: I will take your story at face value. And what I meant by that is I would believe them unless other facts came to light that would discount their story. So I make it an assumption when you come in my office that you're an honest man. Phone rang one day in my office out of customer service. They were very frustrated. There was a man that was behind in his bill and was due to be shut off that day. And he was insisting he wanted to talk to somebody else. And so I went down there and talked to him. I was kind of a court of last resort for those people. And he was at the window, and he explained that in X number of days he was getting a check. We often heard these kinds of stories. And he'd come and pay the bill. He said, I pay it up. And he said he would sign a statement, a paper to that effect. And I was talking with him and dealing with him, chatting a little and sizing up, looking him in the eye. And I believed that he did want to do it right. And so I gave him the extension of time. And he asked me, do you want me to sign this paper saying I'll come in on that day? And I looked him in the eye and I said, no, you don't have to sign a paper. If your word is good, it's good enough for me. And if your word is no good, neither is your signature. You've got your extension. You're fine. The customer service people were very unhappy with me. They said, he'll never pay. But you know what? He did. He came in and did just as he agreed. But I talked to him like an honest man. I treated him like an honest man. And he did just as he agreed. He did as an honest man would do. I've seen that happen more than once. In my opinion, if you're very suspicious in your dealings with people, that reflects both on you and on the person you're dealing with. Makes it harder for you to deal with them, makes them harder to deal with you. Trusting a person can make that person more trustworthy. Not every time, but it's worth a try. Hopes all things. Christians should always have hope. This can apply to many things. When trust in another is shown to be wrong, we do mourn. We do mourn. Somebody's not honest, they don't pay back what's owed, they can't be trusted to do as they agree, they fall away. These things happen, but love retains hope. We keep our hope alive that what's wrong will be made right. I've known people who prayed for a spouse or a child for years, decades, even though the loved one did not seem to respond, they continued in prayer. Why? Hope. While there is life, there is hope. I've seen relationships turned around and hostility meld into acceptance with application of time and love. What made this happen? Hope. It's a vital ingredient of the Christian life. If you believe in prayer, believe in answers to prayer, believe in hope. For we are not like those who have no hope. Endures all things. Okay, now endure in this context is not the same word or meaning as bears all things, which we read earlier in the verse. That word means to hold up or support. Endure was a military term of the time used in ancient literature to depict the hardship of the soldier in holding the line. It means to stand fast at all cost, withstand an enemy assault. And so we have in one case a sense of bearing the burdens of one another or holding up one another, supporting one another, if you will. But here is the sense of withstanding an attack from the outside, not necessarily within the church. And it carries the idea of facing things like suffering, persecution. Paul said, I've endured the loss of all things and count it but rubbish. And being patient during the assault. This is love both for God and for the brethren. It's enabled many Christians to endure persecution and endure the persecution that's happening out there today that I mentioned earlier. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness. It rejoices with the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. This text is a very good measuring stick to measure the church, to measure yourself. For as individuals, we need to get on with our lifetime's work of working on ourselves. The church as a whole has what? The church age to work on these things. Some churches are striving, some churches are falling away. But we have the years till the Lord returns to measure the church against this measuring stick. The church continues even though individual members pass away. And so as we think about, or if we think about, handing the church down to the next generation, it's an important measuring stick to measure it by. We'll have our closing hymn now. It's